Magneto speed versus lab radar, why cheap bipods are a bad idea, some more info on the SIG Romeo 1, and more this week on Mail Call Mondays. I'm John McQuay with 8541 Tactical, and this is Mail Call Mondays, the show that answers your questions about precision rifles, optics, and equipment. Welcome to another Mail Call Mondays, and this Monday we are going to kick it off about talking about chronographs. Now, there are a lot of opinions on which chronograph is best, which chronograph fits a specific need, but we're going to talk in general real quick why you as a precision rifle shooter need a chronograph, or at least access to a chronograph. And access to a chronograph means a buddy that will loan one to you, because the reality is every range trip does not require a chronograph, but there are key times when you need it to gather that information. Now let's first assume that you're a precision rifle shooter that is not into reloading at all. Either you don't have time to do it, you don't have space to do it, or your significant other just really does not want your apartment living room table crowded with reloading stuff. So if you are not even into reloading, a chronograph will still be highly beneficial to you in taking factory ammunition and seeing how that will perform in your rifle. It's very easy for us to go on the internet and look up the ballistic coefficient for a certain bullet. It's easy for us to go on the internet and look up approximate velocities for a certain cartridge, a certain load from a certain manufacturer. The problem is, while that bullet's ballistic coefficient is not going to change in your barrel, that velocity is going to be specific to your individual rifle, your individual barrel, and actually, depending upon the powder that's used in that cartridge, it could even be dependent upon your temperature, summer, winter, fall, etc. So it's really important to be able to go to the range with a chronograph and verify a velocity for your rifle for that load. And once you have that done, then for all the ammunition in that lot, you're pretty much done. So you can go out, you can get the velocity in an intermediate temperature range, and you can use that pretty well to base your ballistic calculations off of. Now, if you really want to get specific on it, then you'll go out over multiple different temperature ranges, and you'll get that velocity over those temperature ranges, and you can get an idea of how that temperature is going to affect the propellant in that individual cartridge. But that muzzle velocity combined with the ballistic coefficient that you looked up in your ballistic calculator or online will give you very accurate data to be able to make long range shots without actually having shot that distance before. So that is where it is really important for the average guy who is buying his ammunition. Now remember that as lot numbers change, as companies change their lots of propellant, or they may even switch to a totally different propellant, you will need to go back and redo that chronograph session and get those velocities again. So that's why it's really important to pay attention to those lot numbers. If you're buying match ammunition, buy as much match ammunition as you can for that rifle. Once you've verified that is a good type of ammo for that rifle, buy as much as you can in one shot. That way you don't have to keep refreshing your data as you go along. Now, when we switch over to hand loaders, chronographs are vitally important for hand loaders to help you develop a load. There are quite a few different techniques out there that will allow you to develop an accurate load, find your accuracy node without ever actually shooting at a target. So you could take a rifle that doesn't even have a sighting system on it yet, doesn't even have a rifle scope, and you can shoot a ladder over a chronograph and see what that velocity is doing, and you can pick that even velocity node where it starts to flatten out, and that will give you a very, very good idea of where your accurate charge weight is going to be. So without even having a scope, with having poor fundamentals of shooting a rifle, you can still work up an accurate charge. Now, I'm still on the fence on if that is the best method to work up a charge. I still prefer to use a variety of methods and to verify across methods to make sure that I have the most accurate load. But that's how a chronograph can get you into an accurate load very, very quickly, and then you can use other methods just to verify that that load is great. When we start to get into fast 6mm and other cartridges, cartridges that have very limited barrel life, a fast 300 Win Mag, that kind of stuff, you don't want to spend hundreds of shots working up the perfect load for your rifle, because as you're doing that, you're wearing the barrel out and you're changing the throat and you're doing a lot of other things. So it's better just to be able to get your load locked in with a minimum number of shots. And the chronograph will help you do that during the load workup. Now, after you have the load worked up, then of course, verifying your velocity, and just like we talked about with the factory ammunition, tracking velocity over temperature changes, that's critical as well. So those are really the two main use cases, the two types of shooters that are going to benefit from chronographs. So now let's talk about the LabRadar versus the MagnetoSpeed. And this is not going to be super in-depth. We've got a couple of range sessions under our belt with the LabRadar right now. I've been using the MagnetoSpeed for quite a few years. We've done some projects with MagnetoSpeed. MagnetoSpeed did sponsor our SHOT Show coverage this year. So we'll make sure we get all that out of the way. We've got a pretty good relationship with them. LabRadar, this is actually a borrowed unit. I borrowed it from my dad because I don't have a LabRadar. We haven't been able to get a T&E unit in from them, so I've had to kind of resort to other methods to get a hold of one to do the comparison. So I just wanted to lay it out to you guys real quick what the relationship is between us and the two different companies. So having said that, let's talk about the pros and the cons of the two different units. Now, both of these will get you your muzzle velocity. Both of them will get you your standard deviation. Both of them will get you extreme spread. Both will allow you to save strings of shot data and be able to review that later on. Now, we're going to mainly concentrate on those basic features. Each of these has some other features. The LabRadar has some really intricate features that right now, I'm dubious on if they are really beneficial to a precision rifle shooter, but they are in there. So I would highly recommend going to LabRadar's website and looking at their full extensive feature list if you're looking at one of these units. Same thing with MagnetoSpeed, and we'll leave links to both of those down below. Now, the MagnetoSpeed, we'll start it with this because I have the most experience with the MagnetoSpeed. The core of the MagnetoSpeed system is this bayonet. And as you can see, ours is blackened by all kinds of muzzle blast. This guy has gotten quite a bit of use. Now, at some point early on, the blast shield that comes on here, the little metal shield, was blown off. MagnetoSpeed did send us a replacement. I think I have since lost the replacement. I never actually put the replacement on because I was kind of curious about the gas cutting and the wearing. And really, we're not getting a whole lot of wear down here on the bayonet. And that may be because most of the rifles we're shooting with this are braked rifles, so they're trying to vent those gases out to the side, or suppressed rifles that are retaining and slowing the gas before they come out. So if you do blow your little metal shield off, don't worry, it's not really gonna harm anything. Maybe you wanna put it back on there because in the long run, you may wear stuff out, but we haven't noticed any negative effects by not having the little silver blast shield on there. Now, the MagnetoSpeed, one of the key benefits and one of the key drawbacks is it mounts on the right or the barrel of your rifle, and it uses a magnetic sensor to detect the flight path of the bullet over top of it. And it uses its own algorithms to determine the time of flight over the sensor to compute that into your muzzle velocity. Now, what we have seen is that it is very quick just to swap this onto different rifles. You don't have to account for the different bullet weights, that kind of stuff. When you get down into 22s, that's really the only time that you need to start playing with the settings, in my experience. Everything else, it pretty much just out of the box, you throw it on, you shoot over top of it, and it's good to go. Now, most of the irritation about the MagnetoSpeed surrounds around its mounting system. The mounting system for the MagnetoSpeed is a clamp and a strap system, as you can see hanging here. And it has a friction buckle and then a thumb screw down here at the bottom, or actually a thumb nut, to tighten everything down. It utilizes a spacer stack in order to get the appropriate distance between the sensor and the axis of the bore. It comes with a square spacer rod that you can sit on top of the sensor, and you can see where the top of that spacer interferes with the bore. And you want this approximately within a quarter inch of the bore in order to be able to accurately read the bullet. Now, you have to be very careful about that, because if it's too far away, you may not get an accurate reading. If it's too close, then you may get a physical interference with the bullet and the bayonet, meaning you may groove this thing, seriously damage it, and then not be able to use it. We did have that experience early on, and I still am not quite certain on if I just didn't get it tight enough, if maybe one of the shim stacks came out of alignment and there was a misalignment when we fired. But since then, I have been very, very careful about when I set this up, utilizing the spacer rod and then pulling the bolt or shotgunning the upper receiver if it's an AR and looking through the bore to make sure that I can't see any of this bayonet to make sure that it is appropriately spaced. We don't really want to have a situation where I shoot another bayonet. These are pretty expensive to replace. Now, if you do, you can get a replacement bayonet from Magneto Speed, so you don't have to buy the whole system over again if you damage the bayonet. Now, these spacer systems do have screws in it, so you can, once you get this set up for your rifle, you can screw the spacer stack together, and that's actually what's recommended, and then keep it that way so you can swap them on and off the rifle very rapidly. As you can see in here, I have one spacer stack set up. This works for the majority of the Sendero varmint type barrels that we run. So I can leave this in here. It goes in the case with the spacer stack in, and then I can swap out if I need to go larger or smaller dependent upon that. One thing that they really could do, and one of our viewers recommended, is that either color code these or mark these spacers separately. That way you can write down in your logbook or write down in a card to keep in the Magneto Speed which spacers go with which weapon system. So if you have quite a few rifles that you chronograph, then you can number the spacer stack and you can have a little code that says this spacer, and this spacer for this rifle, and it will help you a little quicker in setup. We don't vary that much on different barrel diameters, so it's still pretty quick for me to get the right ones for the right barrel, but just one of those small product improvement things. So with having to swap between the different spacers, that does slow this down, and having to install it on the barrel, it slows this down if you're going down the line, say at a class, and you are utilizing this with a number of students to verify their velocities. That and switching between the various different rifles means you have added time involved if you want to make that last check looking down the bore to verify you're not going to damage the unit. So that is really the one major drawback to the Magneto Speed system. It's a little slower to set up. It is definitely slower to swap two different rifles in the same range session. And you have to deal with the little spacers and hope you don't lose any, hope you don't knock them out of alignment, and verify that everything is nice and tight when you put this on. After using this for some time now, what I have pretty much come to the determination is when I'm tightening this thing down, if I think it's too tight, it's probably just right. So I do go on the high end of tension when I'm tightening this system down just to make sure it doesn't move, it doesn't go anywhere. Now, one last drawback on the mounting system that we'll talk about before we move on is that this is designed to be able to be used on suppressed rifles. And before we go much further, this is the Magneto Speed version 3. The Sporter is a little bit lower cost unit, a little bit easier cost to entry into the system, but it does lack some of the features, and the mounting system is not as versatile on the Sporter as it is on the V3. So we're mainly talking about the V3. The V3 does come with the ability to mount this on a suppressed rifle. And when you're mounting it on a suppressed rifle, you will actually mount the bayonet on the suppressor. There's an added pad that goes between the strap and the suppressor to help shield it from the heat of the suppressor. Now, you still can't go do rapid fire strings on it because you're going to heat it up enough that you'll damage the bayonet, you'll damage the strap. So rapid fire is out with a suppressor. If it gets warm, if it gets too hot to touch, you're probably not going to damage anything. But if it goes beyond too hot to touch, then you're running the risk of damaging the system. So again, one last drawback with that. Now, the advantages of the MagnetoSpeed system is that the processor in here, the shot-to-shot recording is very fast. When you fire a shot, it appears almost instantly on the screen. You can see it, you're prepped, you're ready to go to the next shot, you fire the next shot again. Plugging this in and getting it ready to go is very quick. The menus are, although it can be a little fiddly to move through the menu system, the menu is very responsive. Once you select your settings, it really records them pretty quickly. If you get to the end of a shot string, say you've fired 10 shots, that's it for that string. You let the rifle cool down, you come back, you want to fire another 10-shot string. It's very quick to advance to the next series and get to shooting again. So you can spend less time messing around with the menus in here and more time actually shooting. Additionally, the head unit, the actual processor and all that, is separate from the sensor bayonet, and it utilizes a standard headphone cable. So no expensive cables, no crazy stuff to deal with, and you can get as long a cable as you need to set this anywhere. Now, I'm sure there are limits on the length of cable that you can use. I'm not sure what they are right now, but any reasonable length to set this around you to where you can see the LCD display and still have the bayonet mounted on the barrel is going to be fine. So if you damage the cable, shoot the cable, stomp on the cable, break a connector, something like that, it's very easy to go to Walmart, Best Buy, whatever electronic store you have, and buy a new cable to attach the bayonet and the head unit. So you can set this thing wherever you need it to be to see, or if you have a spotter, you can set it in front of the spotter. You're not really roped in to where the display sits at. So again, the MagnetoSpeed, I feel very comfortable with setting it up, getting ready to go, and quickly utilizing the system. The Labradar, on the other hand, caused me a little bit of frustration. I had to go in, I had to read the manual on a couple of things. The one thing that really stands out to me on this is it is slow. It is really, really slow. Moving through the menu features, selecting the different things, I would push the enter button, and I'm not sure if it actually understood that I pushed the enter button. I pushed the enter button again, and then finally it would take the settings. Going between recording the shot, you are not going to do a rapid fire series with this guy, at least not that I have found so far, because you would fire a shot and it would take a while for it to compute everything that it needed to get you a velocity. And then it would display the velocity, and then it would demonstrate with the little LED on here that it's ready to fire again. So actually working with the system, I really have to give the MagnetoSpeed the thumbs up on quickly moving through the menus, quickly getting the settings that you need selected, and get on with it. You may still have to bust open the manual to figure out exactly what it is you want if you're getting into the sensitivity and the other intricate settings in here. But just for shooting and getting it going, it's really quick, pretty good to go. This guy I had to do a little fiddling with. Also, when you set this up, it is sensitive to where you set it because it is still triggering off of the report of the rifle. So you need to set the sensor, or the whole unit actually, in a different location for a braked rifle versus a suppressed rifle. Braked rifle, you can have it set behind the muzzle, closer to the shooter, so you can still reach everything and do what you need to do. A suppressed rifle, you need to have it set in front of the muzzle, really, to pick up the shot. And when you set it in front of the muzzle, now you are out of reach, so you have to break position if you have to change anything on the unit itself. So a little bit of a drawback there. The big advantage of the Labradar system is that once you get it set up, you really don't have to mess with it to change different systems. So if you are shooting a braked fat-barreled rifle, then, you're good to go. You just shoot. You get done, you end your series, you start a new series, you swap out, say now you're shooting a suppressed rifle. You just hit start, you put it into its listening mode or shot detection mode, and then you start firing again. There is not a lot to switch over between weapon systems. You set your rifle aside, say you pick up your handgun and you want to shoot the handgun, maybe to calculate power factor or something. Now you just start it again and you start shooting. The only thing you may have to change is the positioning of the unit, depending upon if you're shooting suppressed or shooting a braked rifle. So big benefit there to not having to swap things over, check that bore axis, check the mounting system and all that. I really, really like that in the Lab Radar. Additionally, we have one viewer who is Paul out at Frontline Defense, and he uses this with classes and being able to just go down the line and set it up for students to shoot, or you can set it in one position, have a student bring their rifle up, set it down next to it, fire a string, record the string, give them their muzzle velocity, and they go off and on to the next student. That is a very, very helpful ability to be able to just quickly do that without having to worry about putting the unit on each individual rifle. So I have to give the Lab Radar the nod for that specific application. If you're going to use it in a classroom environment, I think this would probably be the preferred unit. Now, one thing, if you are using it in that type of environment and you're going to keep this thing powered on for a while, it is power hungry. You're going to need to plug it into the wall. It's just a standard USB cable, or you're going to need to get a power brick like you would use for a cell phone or a laptop and plug the USB cable into the power brick. That way it has power for the whole time. They are a little power hungry. It will eat through internal batteries if you don't give it an external power source. So if you're using it in that classroom environment, plan for that. The MagnetoSpeed takes a 9-volt battery, and that's the power option that we have in here. There are other power options for it, but that battery lasts for a very, very long time. I don't have to replace them very often. I've got a 9-volt lithium battery in here right now, just so we have that cold weather protection. If I'm out in the winter, then I don't have to worry about the power dropping much in that battery, and I don't have to worry about the corrosion. Lithium batteries tend to be a little bit higher quality. So battery power of the nod definitely goes to the MagnetoSpeed. Now, the real reason that I prefer the MagnetoSpeed right now is its compact nature. So I already have the spacer stack set up to where I need it to for a specific rifle. I throw it all in its little hard case. I throw it in the back of the car. When I go to a match, it's very easy to pull this thing out and throw it on the rifle real quick if I need to verify if I'm having any kind of problems whatsoever. There are a couple of mounting solutions out there right now that allow you to even put this on the rifle and shoot a stage with the MagnetoSpeed on the rifle. Now, you have to be very careful about that because the bayonet is not so robust that it's going to take being hammered into an obstacle or slapped off a barricade or something. So you do have to be aware of that. It's not designed to be that rugged. It is fairly rugged as far as drops and handling and bouncing it off the concrete pad. I have dropped it a couple of times in use and haven't damaged anything, although I really wouldn't want to drop this too often. The head unit might be a little bit more prone to damage than the bayonet. But you can actually set it up and you can get it out on a stage, and you could shoot a stage with the MagnetoSpeed on your rifle if you needed to. The Lab Radar is not going to work well on that because it needs to be in a certain cone of fire, a certain angle to the trajectory of your bullet. So if you move offline, it's not going to detect those shots. Now, in the same vein, it is watching your bullet go downrange, so other shooters that are close by can affect it, depending upon what your angle is to those other shooters. With the MagnetoSpeed, no one else on the line is going to affect the MagnetoSpeed. Someone could be shooting with their body touching the side of your body right next to you, and they are not going to cause the MagnetoSpeed to read their shot. It is only going to read your shot. So again, at a match, on a crowded zero line, if I need to throw this on and get a velocity, then the MagnetoSpeed definitely gets the nod. So for match shooters that want that extra insurance to take to the match with them, I definitely recommend the MagnetoSpeed over the Labradar. It's more compact, it's lighter weight, better on batteries. You're not pulling out battery packs and cables and all this stuff. So the MagnetoSpeed is the way to go for that. So for handgun shooters, if you are a handgun shooter, there's really no question the Labradar is the better option. If you need to record power factors, if you need to do load workup for IPSC, IDPA, USPSA, whatever your shooting discipline, if you need to do load development, load workup, and verify power factors, then this guy is a better option. MagnetoSpeed does have the ability to strap onto revolvers. They do have a Picatinny rail adapter so that light rail equipped guns, you can put the MagnetoSpeed on it, but it is far from an ideal option. The Labradar is just much, much better at that type of setup. So hope that gives you a little bit of idea between the two different setups. What may be better for your intended application. They are both solid units when we tested them side by side with the MagnetoSpeed on the rifle and the Labradar at the same time clocking the same shots. They were within 4 to 5 feet per second of each other. So really, statistically, over the shot strings that we were doing, you could say that they're the same. They're not going to affect your ballistics downrange if you chose one average velocity over the other average velocity. They were very, very close. So on that side of things, I really can't say one is better than the other. One thing that I will bring up for load development, a lot of guys are choosing the Labradar for load development because you don't hang anything on your muzzle. You're not changing the harmonics of your barrel. The MagnetoSpeed, you do have to attach it to the barrel, and shooting over a very wide variety of weapon systems, we have noticed that some will change the point of impact. Some will change their shot groupings with the MagnetoSpeed on or with it off. We see that heavier barrel systems tend to be less sensitive to having the bayonet on. Suppressed systems seem to be less sensitive to having the bayonet attached. Lighter barrel systems with longer light barrels, they seem to be more sensitive. Now, this is a broad generalization. You may have a long light barrel system that shows no deviation with the MagnetoSpeed on or with it off, and you may have a short fat barrel that does show a deviation. It's just something that you don't know until you strap the MagnetoSpeed on and shoot it. For that reason, there are quite a few companies out there now that are building extensions that attach to your stock or your chassis system and mount the MagnetoSpeed on that extension instead of on the barrel itself. This allows you to still use this for load workup without affecting the point of impact or the harmonics of the barrel at all. So that kind of brings it a little bit more on par with the Labradar, but when you're doing that again, you're adding added expense, added equipment that you have to carry with you. So just something to keep in mind, but that kind of brings the two on a little bit more of a level field for guys that are going to use it for a load workup. So I just wanted to go ahead and point that out. So right now I can't say that one is better than the other. They both serve a purpose. It's just a matter of knowing the pros and cons of both units and knowing what is going to work best for your specific situation. There is a little bit of a price difference between the two, but depending upon what accessories you use for both, it may kind of even that out. Depending upon what plates you get, what tripod mounts you get, if you already have a tripod to mount it on, all that stuff will factor into the decision, of course. But really, what I want to hear is what you guys think. If you own a MagnetoSpeed or a Labradar or both, please comment down below and let me know why you chose one over the other, or why you use both, and what specific applications you use them for. I love to hear what you guys have to say on a specific topic, because my opinion most definitely is not the only one that's out there. So hopefully that gives you guys some information on chronographs. Now real quick, we're going to switch gears and we are going to talk about bipods, and specifically broken bipods. You notice bipods normally have two legs. This one only has one. Now, a while back, we did a video about counterfeit Atlas bipods. B&T Industries has been fighting the counterfeit war for quite some time now, and there are companies out there that are producing bipods in China, and they are importing them to the U.S., mainly being sold on Amazon and in gun shows and all over the place, and some of them, they're advertising them as clones or as a different trade name, but they are most definitely counterfeits of Atlas bipods. Some really underhanded people are actually trying to sell these as Atlas bipods, and unknowing buyers are spending a good deal of money for a Chinese copy. Legitimate Atlas bipods are made by B&T Industries here in the U.S. They do not outsource them to China. There are no Chinese manufacturers that are making them and then importing them into the U.S. At one point in time, there was a deal on the table to manufacture a copy under license for airsoft use of an older design, and that ended up falling through before it was ever completed. So there are no licensed copies of B&T Industries Atlas bipods. Either it is an Atlas bipod or it isn't. But when we did that video about the clones or the counterfeit bipods, there were a lot of people that were raging on there about that they would never pay that much money for a bipod, that the clone does just fine for them, or that if it fulfills their use. And I'm going to try to keep my personal opinion out of it. I think I might have expressed a little bit on that video. But the reality of the situation is I have beaten the tar out of Atlas bipods, and I've yet to have one fail. Now, that's not to say that they don't. Everything can fail, but the number of Atlas bipods that I have seen fail at a match are very, very minuscule. I can't think of one offhand. I believe I actually heard of one at one point, and I don't recall what the failure was. But I can't think of off the top of my head one where I actually saw one fail on a stage so I could say this is why it failed. The counterfeit of the Atlas that I purchased in order to do that video and do that comparison had just sat in the shop here because I have got a couple of Atlas bipods, and because of the quick detach nature of them, I just rotate them on to whatever gun that I happen to be shooting at the time. So I didn't need to take out this counterfeit piece of junk. So it sat on a table here. It wasn't really, I wasn't able to return it because I knew I was buying a counterfeit piece of junk. So why would I buy a counterfeit piece of junk and then return it saying I didn't know what I was getting? I knew what I was doing. So I just threw it on the bottom shelf of the workbench and it sat there for a while. Friend of mine was getting into precision rifle shooting. He had a bipod that really was not working for his intended purpose. So I tossed him this one and said, here, give it a try, take it out to the range, shoot it. I jokingly told him, if you break it, you know, no big deal, throw it in the garbage. Because I didn't expect him to break it right off the bat. I expected that he would at least get a couple of months of shooting out of it. Well, he was actually doing some dry fire in his house, and he was utilizing the technique that I demonstrated to him, how to get a nice solid prone position, get straight behind the rifle, and how to load the bipod. And he got behind the rifle and loaded the bipod and snapped the leg right off of the bipod. And he actually gave me the bag with all the parts in it. But the bolt that goes through the leg here, that is this nice shiny chrome-plated metal, it snapped right off. There's a stub of it still here in the waist, and the leg came off, and it was done. So I really would not even say that I got the $20 or $30 worth of use out of it. Now, it's a Chinese POS. They're not going to stand behind it. They're not going to give me a refund. They're not going to replace it. It's garbage. Once I get done with this video, I will throw this thing in the trash can. I might be able, if I was really so inclined, to get an easy out, get an extractor, extract that stub, go to the local store, try to find a bolt with the correct thread pitch, from our fastener store and put this thing back together, but why? That's way more time than the bipod is actually worth. So once this video is done, this guy's going to go in the garbage. But that just goes again to show you that you get what you pay for, and sometimes you get a little bit less than what you pay for. I have never had an Atlas bipod fail like this, and I have put the legs against a barricade and leaned my entire body weight into an Atlas bipod and shot a stage that way in order to stabilize the gun. I'm fairly certain this would not have survived that kind of use. So don't fool yourself into thinking that you can buy a clone for a cheap price and get the same quality that you would get with a legitimate B&T Atlas bipod. Now, if the Atlas is outside of your price range, there are Harris bipods out there. I believe the patent has expired on the Harris bipod, so if you get a Caldwell or whatever that looks like a Harris, they're not actually infringing on anybody's patent. It's not a big deal. Get what you can afford to get, but I would really request that you not buy counterfeits of American companies' products that are, in the end, harming that company. Now, there is an argument that trying out the counterfeit may lead into purchase of a legitimate bipod, and I will put this on the table because I explained very closely to this gentleman what the differences were between this bipod and a legitimate Atlas bipod, where this one falls down, where the Atlas is superior to it. And after using this and using the adjustments and using the leg locks and that, he decided he liked this format of bipod and purchased a legitimate Atlas bipod. So contact with the clone did actually make a sale for Atlas bipods. But then again, you could say the same thing if I actually loaned him one of my legitimate Atlas bipods and he utilized that instead of breaking the clone. He may have decided utilizing the real deal that he wanted to purchase one. So I don't think keeping a clone around is a valid argument from that. If you aren't sure if you want an Atlas bipod or not, it may be better just to buy the Atlas. Buy one used if you can on one of the different forums. Just again, be careful, make sure you're getting a legitimate, not a clone. And then if you don't like it, sell it or buy from a legitimate Atlas dealer. And if you don't like it, sell it. If you don't beat it up, you don't rash it up, you're probably going to get pretty close to what you paid for it when you go to sell it. Again, assuming that the clone market or the counterfeit market doesn't hurt you on that side of things. So a couple other things we're going to talk about real quick. We got our Timney Triggers Calvin Elite 1022 trigger back from Timney. We originally had this in. We put it in our 1022 for NRL 22 competition, and it was shooting a little bit heavy. Timney advertises this as a 1.5 to 2 pound trigger. Ours was shooting about 2.5 pounds. So we contacted Timney. We advised them of what we had. They asked us to send the unit back. We sent it back. They cleaned it up, tuned it, did whatever they did to it, put it back through some QC checks, and sent it back to us. And now it is shooting under 2 pounds. So we're going to put it back on our rifle, get it back out, burn through a couple of bricks of ammo to make sure that it is holding that adjustment. And we'll come back and we'll give you the full rundown on the Calvin Elite 1022 trigger. But the adjustable options on this thing are really cool. The pull weight is not adjustable, but the trigger shoe has kind of a biathlon style trigger in here to where you can put different shoes on, you can set different angles, different heights, all kinds of really cool stuff to dial in your trigger finger placement. So a real neat trigger. Look for the full review of that coming up soon. And I am really excited about this guy, but this is a Geissele Automatics single-stage precision trigger for an AR. So those of you guys that are AR fans, but maybe aren't really a two-stage trigger fan, Geissele now has their single-stage precision trigger out. I believe this is the first single-stage trigger that Geissele has offered. So we're really interested to get this in the rifle and try. Now, they have had the single-stage precision out for a few months, but that was the curved trigger version. This is the flat trigger bow version. And I really, the more I have shot flat triggers on precision rifles and even handguns, the more I prefer a flat trigger because of the way that my finger engages the trigger. It's just my personal preference. There are a lot of people out there that still prefer curved triggers. But I was waiting for them to offer the straight trigger. I jumped on one of their sales and grabbed this guy. So I can't wait to get in a rifle and come back and let you guys know how well it works. I have been incredibly pleased with all of the Geissele products that I have worked with so far, but this is the first single stage from them that I have touched, so I will be very interested to see how this works. I don't even know what AR we're going to put it in yet. The 6.5 Mach 10 has a Geissele high-speed two-stage in it. I don't know if I really want to take that trigger out because it is set exactly the way I want it, but we'll see. We have a couple of other AR platforms in here that I have the ability to drop this guy in, and then we'll give you our full impression on it coming soon. And finally, I want to talk about the SIG P320RX. We are still going through our evaluation process on this guy and getting the round count up on it before I come do my full impression on the handgun. But I wanted to point out one real quick change that we have made to it. After I came back from TriggerCon, I spent quite a bit of time talking to the SIG reps there, and we came back with one of the new shrouds for the Romeo 1. And this is a steel shroud that protects the Romeo from impacts. There's a little bit of a gap between the top of the shroud and the aluminum body of the Romeo, so it should allow the shroud to absorb quite a bit of impact before it actually impacts the body of the Romeo itself. Hopefully this will protect the window a little bit more, and I'm hoping that because of the way the shroud actually engages the inlet in the slide, that impacts to the shroud through one-handed manipulations, etc., will be transferred to the slide instead of to the mounting screws. So we'll see as we go forward how that works. I was out at the range this morning doing some one-handed manipulations, so slamming that shroud into the table to cycle the slide, and I didn't really notice any problems at all. Now, we've still got a couple of hundred rounds that we need to get through the Romeo 1 before we can come back and really give you a good opinion on it. But when we go out to do the next, what will probably be the final test session on it, I'm going to go ahead and shoot a zero, bang it up, burn some plus P ammo through it, and then go back and shoot a zero confirmation again to make sure that we don't have any drift at all. And then, of course, don't worry, we will drop it on concrete and see if the shroud keeps the Romeo 1 alive. That is really what I'm interested to see before we put our stamp on this gun as a duty level handgun. That's really something I take quite seriously. We see in law enforcement a lot of guys, especially on the carbine side, put stuff on their guns because they're trying to save money that really is not appropriate for the duty environment. A patrol officer puts his stuff through quite a bit of banging and bumping and moisture and snow, rain, heat, all that stuff. So it does not live an easy life. Any of you guys that have ever purchased former police turn-in guns, you know the wear on them is significant. They're not shot as much as, say, a civilian competitor's handguns, but the wear of just carrying them outside your body and banging them on stuff, the constant drawing and reholstering, that kind of stuff really takes a toll on weapon systems and things that are mounted on the outside of weapon systems. So the P320, I have high hopes for it to be a one part number, ready to go optics equipped handgun. But the key part to that is the Romeo 1 to see if it can survive in a duty environment. So we will see when we get it out and bounce it off the concrete, and we'll get back to you and report on the full review on the SIG P320RX full. That's it for this Mail Call Mondays. If you guys have any questions or comments over anything that we've covered, please leave it in the comment section down below. If you like the video, please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. If you're listening to us on your favorite podcast app, you can send questions to us at 8541tactical@gmail.com. I want to again send a shout out to all of our Patreon supporters. Thank you guys very much. We really can't do what we do without your support. And until next time, get out and shoot.